Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 232 and a half. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is not with me right now. That's because he is in San Jose, California. Literally at this moment as I'm speaking, he is cage side for Bellator 226, which is starting to unfold in California. Meanwhile, it is super, super late Saturday night, early Sunday morning here in Abu Dhabi, where UFC 242 took place earlier this evening. And Khabib Nurmagomedov is still your UFC lightweight champion. In fact, he's your undisputed lightweight champion now that he dethroned the interim champ, Dustin Poirier, and he did so in incredible fashion. Third round submission, 2 minutes and 6 seconds in the third round, and it was just an amazing performance by Khabib Nurmagomedov. It really was. This was a big event, a big moment that he, you know, later afterwards admitted he definitely felt the pressure and the expectations and all those things around him. This was the kickoff of this 5-year partnership between the UFC and the government here in Abu Dhabi. This was called Abu Dhabi Showdown Week. There was all kinds of stuff, you know, designed around it. There was concerts, there were parties, there were all kinds of stuff, and this was basically designed to be a big showcase of Abu Dhabi and the UAE and, you know, kind of what the area has to offer. And, of course, they wanted the hometown fans to be able to cheer alongside Khabib Nurmagomedov, and they did exactly that. They built this place that the event was in tonight was called The Arena. That's just a very, very simple name there, The Arena. It's, as it was described to me, a semi-permanent structure. It's not, you know, it was... Calling it a tent is a little bit unfair. I mean, it's shaped like a tent, but, you know, much, you know, kind of the hard, firm walls or whatever. But it's not, you know, a full-fledged building. It's, from my understanding, at least going to be here for the 5 years of the deal here between the UFC and the government of Abu Dhabi. And then they'll have other events and other things there, and then they'll keep bringing the UFC back. Although it sounds like they're talking about other options as well, but this was kicking off, and again, a lot of pressure on Khabib Nurmagomedov's shoulders. He was expected to deliver, and he did it, even with the pressure, even with the expectations. He turned in another solid performance, and you know, if you listen to the show earlier in the week, I ended up picking Dustin Poirier, and saying that, man, just the way he was carrying himself, the things he was doing, and his game, you know, not just the Rocky story, but his game too, that I thought, you know, he had what it takes to beat Khabib Nurmagomedov. But, you know, at the same time, I also realized I can't believe I'm picking against a guy that's 27-0. And guess what? He's now 28-0. And prove that he is no fluke, man, deserving of that right. I don't know if anybody said he was a fluke, but, you know, this did not end up being the guy that was able to challenge him. Now, Dustin had some moments, you know, very first round, started out very patient. You know, Dustin kicked the legs a little bit, looked to kind of settle in, you know, tried to defend a takedown, ended up getting taken down and losing that first round. Then, you know, round two, listen, Dustin had him hurt. I mean, it was one good shot, to be honest with you, that landed, but he was hurt. I mean, there were some tense moments there for Khabib. I thought, you know, he wobbled a little bit, and then, you know, he's always kind of awkward, but I thought it was even more awkward the way he came out and was looking to recover. So, you know, I think there were a couple steps there where he was in a moment of trouble, but he shook it off. And in the third round, you know, difficult submission situation. I mean, Dustin Poirier had what looked to be a really deep guillotine choke. Didn't get all the way to guard. And in fact, it looked like he actually was kind of willing to go out of guard and thought he might be able to angle a little bit and get the squeeze. He later said, you know, he's not sure that was the right thing, and now he's got some regrets. And, oh, man, heartbreaking stuff for Dustin Poirier. I mean, you know, thought this was his moment. You know, the all the years, all the sacrifice, you know, finally built up to this, and he comes up short. And just, I mean, Khabib's a monster. It's that simple. Khabib Nurmagomedov is a monster, and he looked phenomenal. And then if you haven't seen the scene, Khabib actually scales the cage afterwards, reminiscent of going after Dylan Danis in Las Vegas, but he jumps on Dana White. He leaps the cage. And I will say, for a brief moment, because I worked backstage all night, I was interviewing the winning fighters all night long. But for the main event, I'd gotten caught up with all my work, and so I was able to slip out and watch the main event in person out there. And I will say, I think everybody in the press section, you know, wasn't in on the joke to start with, and the minute you scale the cage, it was like, oh my god, are you serious? Like, what? And then the madness quickly is restored to sanity, and everybody realizes it's a joke, and he's just, you know, saying what's up to Dana. And then, of course, classy stuff in the cage afterwards. You know, he comes back in the cage. Habib and Dustin exchange jerseys, you know, their walkout T-shirts, and, you know, Habib says he's going to end up selling the one that he wore from Dustin. He's going to autograph it and sell it and give the money that he makes from it to the charity foundation that Dustin Poirier, you know, raises money for. Dana White, lady studied, matched that figure as well. So, I mean, just classy stuff all the way around. And then Habib, you know, makes it a point to say, you know, look, this fight was about respect. This was about great people, great athletic things. This is not trash talking. That's not what MMA is about. So it was cool. I mean, look, I'm a website operator. I get it. The trash talking is what gets clicks. And at the end of the day, I know it generates a ton of money. It does. But, man, it is so much more pleasant when a fight is built up in a manner of just, you know, two incredible athletes looking to do battle versus, you know, making it some kind of personal issue. So, great performance by Habib Nurmagomedov, and silly me to bet against him. Now, you got to figure out who out there can beat him. And, you know, it does sound like, from all intents and purposes, the UFC plans on doing the Tony Ferguson fight next for Habib. Of course, that's been booked several times before. It's always fallen through. We'll try once again. But, I mean, Tony Ferguson really is the absolute deserving number one contender. There's no question about it. You know, was the interim champ, never lost his title, just had some injuries and things that didn't fall his way along the way. But he's the right guy. And I do think he has some chances. There's a reason that everybody has always thought that that's the matchup to make. And, you know, not the least of which, Tony is incredibly dangerous off his back. He's you know, you're probably going to end up taken down at some point by Habib Nurmagomedov. It's just his chain wrestling, his takedowns, his pressure, it's intense, and Dustin admitted as much afterwards. So you're probably going to find yourself on your back at some point. But, you know, Tony Ferguson is creative on the feet as well, you know, and he's got some unorthodox stuff that I think could potentially catch Habib, because Habib, you know, is a little sloppy in the striking department. He's aggressive and it pays off, but, you know, that's a fight that we all want to see, and I think that's definitely the fight to make. You know, some other names that people are throwing out there are our good buddy Oscar Willis from the Mac Life. You know, he threw out the name Justin Gaethje as somebody that can maybe beat Habib. You know, just the pressure and the willingness to get in there and maybe take a couple punches to give some. But, you know, if you have that ability to land some power, maybe that's what does Habib in, and certainly you'd probably want something like that. Guy on Twitter named Keith England at Cowman1970, he hit me up after the fight. He said the only man that can beat Habib is Gregor Gillespie. I've said it over and over. Gregor, of course, a great wrestler, so yeah, he might be able to hang in there in that department as well. You know, I don't think that fight's going to happen anytime soon. Gregor, who I'm a big fan of, is still making his way up the list, but, you know, he is starting to make some waves, so who knows? I think a big key is just going to be how long Habib hangs on. How long does he keep fighting? He said, look, I don't have a ton of fights left. You know, I've been through this a long time. I've got money in the bank. You know, yes, there's some more things I want to do, but I'm not going to be doing this a ton of time. So whether he sticks around long enough to get to Gregor Gillespie, I don't know, but I can appreciate the sentiment and the fact that, you know, that type of game could get it done. So we'll see. We'll see. The name George St. Pierre was brought up again tonight, and you know, Habib made it clear if we're doing GSP, we're doing it at 155. So, you know, GSP's got to be back. He's got to be willing to cut. But if he is, he said, look, that guy's a legend, and I'm down. So who knows? Who knows? I mean, that would be a super fight. It'd be big, big money. It'd be a lot of interest, and man, you start talking about goat talk there. I mean, that would be pretty phenomenal. But again, you know, GSP's got to be wanting to come back, and he's got to be wanting to do it at 155. So we'll see. We'll see. I just, not a lot of names pop right to the top of mind, and you say that dude would smoke Khabib. I mean, phenomenal, man, absolutely phenomenal. Just shut down Dustin Poirier tonight. So all right, listen. Habib did talk to the media afterwards, and you could tell he was certainly a lot less tense than he was beforehand. So we talked just a little bit about his plans and what's coming next. Man, why he believes he considers some GOAT talk. And I don't see how you can say anything otherwise, man. The man is absolutely phenomenal. And here's what he had to say after the fight.
Congrats on the win. Can you just talk us through how the fight went relative to your expectations? Did you feel like you were going to be able to do what you did tonight and eventually submit Dustin?
You know, guys, Dustin Poirier is one of the best in the world. He's not just champion state or champion country. One of the best in the world. You know? Of course, I expect it's going to be a tough match. It's going to be a tough opponent. And it was a great match, I think.
With you saying that and praising him, you beating him like you did, what does that say about you now, being 28-0, 12-0 in UFC?
I don't know. I hope, you know, it's like, you know what's interesting in this sport? Even if you're 28-0, 12-0 in UFC, you're one of the biggest stars. You smash everybody. People gonna talk about, you have to fight with him, you have to fight with him, we have to fight with him. Give me just respect. Put me on number one pound for pound fight next week. And because I think I deserve this. Because I dominate, you know, with all my opponents. I'm undefeated, you know. And I think I deserve some respect.
And you obviously care about your legacy and stuff a lot. Everyone wants this Tony Ferguson fight to happen. It's fell apart four times before. Dana said that's the next fight as long as he accepts it. How important is it for this fight to happen, finally?
My next opponent is very good steak with burger double cheese. I want this one, you know, and with some juice with ice. I want to enjoy a little bit. Give me a couple days, guys, please.
Habib, right over here, right in front of you. Hi, congratulations on the win. Tell me what, now that it's kind of over, tell me what this whole week has been like for you. This has been so big for the region. You're kind of the reason why we're here, right? Tons of pressure on you, tons of media obligations. Now that it's over, when you look back, just tell me what this week has been like for you.
This is not about 1 week. This is about like last couple years, you know. I train so hard with day off, without day off, you know. And of course, last week it was very hard too, you know, with cutting weight, with all this media stuff, with pressure. Like before, when I come to locker room, I feel great. But when I beginning walking inside the arena, I feel pressure because I watch, like, oh, okay, I know this guy. I watch other guy, I know this guy. This guy from my village, this guy from my uncle, this guy my friend. Oh, I know this guy, he's from my city, you know? Like, everyone inside the arena, I know everybody, you know? That's why I feel a little bit pressure. Like, for example, when I fight in US, I don't know almost nobody inside the arena. But here is like a lot of people, my close people come and to support me, and I feel a little bit pressure. All my uncles come, my cousins, you know, it's like big, big family come, and you know, it's like I feel so much pressure.
Firstly, you had your father here tonight in your corner. What kind of influence did that have? How did that help you by having him here at the arena?
It's like I told you guys, when I go to the cage with my father, I feel I go to the cage with the lion, you know. My father was with me, Shamil was with me, Muhammad was with me. Of course, Javier Mendez, Mexican Lion, was with me. You know, it's like, they give me so much energy, you know. And I'm very happy, you know, I showed this great performance with my father and all my teammates. You know, it's like, why I am here? Because of my team. My sparring partners, Islam, Omar, Abu Bakr, Zubar, other Islam, everybody, it's like Saigid, Gajid, like we have so strong team with coaches, with support, you know, it's like that's why I'm here. They push me everywhere in grappling, striking, wrestling, conditioning, like everywhere. We push each other and that's why we win. We keep winning and inshallah we're gonna do this. More and more.
You've become certainly an inspiration to many in the Muslim world. What was it like to fight here, and where next in this region would you like to fight?
I love this region. I've been in Turkey, Europe, Russia, like even Dagestan, US, Brazil, Canada. I've been everywhere, like Africa, but this place, most safe place in the world. You know, Emirates, Abu Dhabi and Dubai, this is amazing place. Of course, I want to fight here. I have very good energy here. I love these people. These people love me, you know. And I hope they like my performance and they enjoy with all event. And I want to come back here, like, maybe next year. Why not? Because UFC already make with Abu Dhabi exclusive contract. And next year they're going to make show here too, you know. And we'll see, maybe in Russia. Maybe in Russia, in Moscow, in 80,000 stadium. I think I can fight in Moscow. I can fight here in Abu Dhabi, like everywhere. Maybe in Africa, why not? I really want to fight in Africa too. Thank you.
Khabib, just down here. I know you've spoken before about a fight with GSP down the line. Actually, he was just asked moments ago about this fight. And he said, sure, as his answer to that being maybe a possibility. What are your thoughts on that?
George St. Pierre is great, great guy, great champion, great athlete. You know, he's very good, for example, for young kids. If you want to come back, I know he retired. If you want to come back, if he feel hungry, you know, if he feel he can improve his legacy with fight with me and he can make 155, I'm waiting for him.
And
I think maybe he like new build. If he like, I can give him, you know, just only for one photo. But then he have to give me back this belt, you know. But if you want to fight, welcome.
And there was a lot of mutual respect between you and Dustin. Can you just speak a little bit about what you think of Dustin as an opponent, as a person as well? Obviously, you both do a lot of charity work together, and you announced that you would be selling the shirt that you were wearing as well. If you could just speak a little bit about what you think of Dustin as a person.
I just changed with him T-shirt because I feel we can use this platform. Octagon, and I feel I can sell this T-shirt and make more than money if he sell, because I have more followers than him in Instagram. I'm gonna put this Instagram, this T-shirt, and I'm gonna sell this. And I don't know how much I'm gonna make, and all money I'm gonna send him to his fund, and he can do whatever he want about, because I hear about he do some charity stuff, and we're famous, we have money, you know, but we can help people, why not? You know, if you have money in your hand, this is very good. But if money go in your mind, this is very bad. And that's why we have to stay focused, you know, stay humble, help people, this is very important. And if you help people, why I cannot help him? I'm gonna help him, you know, it's like, this is very important for us, you know. Even if you make one kid happy, you know, it's gonna be a big honor for me.
Khabib, to your center. Khabib, talk us through what was going on in your mind during the second round. So there was like one point of time where Dustin seemed like he was at the forefront and he was more dominant. What was going on in your mind? Did you feel like you were weaker or so?
Honestly, I don't understand the question.
Talk us through what was going on in your mind during the second round. Because at that time, you know, Dustin, he landed a few punches and he seemed a little more dominant. He seemed like he stood a chance. What did you feel about that?
How I can feel? This is a fight, you know. He punched my face, how I can feel? If I punch your face, how you gonna feel? You don't like this, I know. You know, nobody like if someone punch your face. You know, this is no good. Please don't punch someone's face. If you're gonna punch people, nobody feel good. He's great opponent. He punched me a couple times, but I control everything. Only one thing, it was very close. This is guillotine. First time, it was very good guillotine. But I expect him from him because I watch all his fights and I know he's all the time going to guillotine. And you know, like first time it was close, second time I give him because I feel he lost so much energy, so much power because of guillotine. And you know, this is like part of the game, how I can play with my opponents. Not many people can understand this.
So your team captain, DC, was double champ. Your main rival, Conor McGregor, was double champ. Are you ever interested in going up in weight or down in weight to get a second belt?
No, I don't want to go. I'm not Walter weight, and I'm not fighter weight. I'm lightweight champion, you know, and I want to defend my title in lightweight division. Walter weight, maybe, but not yet. I don't think about two belt, three belt. I already have three belts, two different belts, you know. This one's a little bit heavy, and I feel great in lightweight division.
All right, so very happy Khabib Nurmagomedov, ready to go eat his steak and his burger and celebrate. And again, it does sound like the Ferguson fight's going to be next, but he said, you know, give me a little time. Let me enjoy this win a little bit, and then we'll go from there. So fair enough, you know. You probably want a couple days before you accept it, and you already got to start thinking about your next fight and your next, you know, date, your next training camp, all that. I'm sure he wants to enjoy it for a couple days. Meanwhile, man, I don't know how your heart doesn't go out for him. Dustin Poirier, as you would expect, classy as always, came to the back, talked to the media as well. I think he was battling back a lot of emotion. Certainly, you know, as he said, he's got to live with this, and he's got to think about it. And you know, he's got to ask and try to answer to himself why he didn't fulfill his destiny. And those aren't easy conversations to have, man. These athletes, obviously, they work their ass off for one thing. When it doesn't turn out, it can be very, very tough. And props to Dustin Poirier for stepping in. Again, he was very, very emotional, and understandably so. And like I said, I just don't know how your heart doesn't go out for him. You know, I think there's still big fights available for him. I think this guy has, you know, become well-respected and well-liked. And because of that, you know, I think there are going to be, you know, still big fights on the table for him, even with this loss. I know he's frustrated, but who knows? You know, maybe this setback will lead him down a different path or lead him to a title shot in the future that he feels better prepared for. So we'll see. But man, I think you can just hear the emotion in his voice as he addresses the media. It's Dustin Poirier.
Obviously disappointing with the outcome tonight, but now that you've had a little time to reflect on what happened in there, can you just give us, you know, some more thoughts aside from what you said in the cage?
The guy's good, man. He's a world champ. Maybe I could have done more. You know, hindsight's 20/20. I was very prepared for this fight, to fight 25 minutes. He did exactly what I thought he was going to do. Maybe, you know, of course I'm going to beat myself up, and I'm the only one who has to deal with this, me and my family. But I'm all just wondering if maybe against the fence, when I got under hooks, if I could have tried a little bit harder to get off the fence, maybe. You know, but that's just questions that I'm going to have to live with for the rest of my life. I thought for sure he was winning the rounds, obviously, taking me down and dominating, but I felt like he was squeezing hard. We were getting slicker. I felt like he was getting a little weaker. Coming into this fight, I thought later in the third, fourth, and fifth were going to be my rounds. Not that I was planning on giving up the first two, but I knew they were going to be tough. So coming back to the stool after each of those rounds, in the beginning, I wasn't getting damaged a whole lot with shots that were hurting. He cut me. But I thought the deeper we got into the fight, the more slick I was going to be able to be. But, you know, that's fighting, man. Stuff is tough.
Yeah, and it seems like you got him with a couple of good shots in the second round, and then that guillotine seemed pretty deep. How close did you feel you were in those two moments?
The guillotine was really deep. But for the rest of my life, I'm going to look back and wonder why I didn't jump full guard with it. I just threw one leg over so he couldn't pass. to take the choke off. I should have jumped full guard. I don't know why I went shin across the stomach with the right leg or whatever I had, a butterfly with it. I should have went full guard so he couldn't roll out and relieve the pressure. When I heard him, maybe in the back of my head, the takedown was, I felt like I couldn't get anything going with my stand up. He's very awkward. He dips his head and throws uppercuts. We never got into an orthodox kickboxing or boxing exchange on the feet. It was all one punch at a time, or him dipping and throwing a knee, or him dipping and throwing an uppercut. I didn't get a rhythm. I felt like the way he was pulling back, it was hard for me to set up my combinations and get into a rhythm. I sound like I have a lot of excuses, but I was just so prepared, you know, for tonight. This one really hurts.
And I know it's probably not what's on the top of your mind right now, but Khabib did say after the fight he was going to donate to your charity. And then I don't know if you heard Dana when you're in the back there. He said he's going to match whatever Khabib contributes. What does that mean to you?
You know, it's great, you know, because it's going to help a lot of people. We're building a water well in Uganda. So, you know, that I'm sure with the memorabilia sold, we're going to reach the goal and build a solar power water well with a tower for the pygmy people in an orphanage and school in Uganda. So I'm proud of that, you know. But I wanted to leave tonight the world champ and just let myself down, man. But I appreciate them, you know, helping out the charity. It's been growing, and I'm very grateful for that.
Dustin, over here. I was wondering if the heat affected your cardio at all. Did you feel it in the arena? A lot of fighters were complaining about how hot it was.
No, it didn't. I felt good.
You seemed to wobble, Khabib, in the second round. Did you think you could potentially finish him at that point in the second round?
Yeah, I knew I had him hurt. He does a really good job of keeping a good poker face and not acting like he's hurt, but I saw his legs go. I had trouble landing my shots. I was worried about his takedown. I started throwing a lot of looping shots, not being slick and setting up combinations. The shot that I hurt him with, I believe I threw a jab cross and switch stance. That way I can still be in range with power shots when he pulled back. And I threw a right straight from an orthodox stance that clipped him and hurt him. He circled well, had a good poker face. I didn't go crazy like I usually do. I kind of pulled back after I threw a couple looping shots that missed. I think I threw a knee right after that clipped him a little bit too. I think I hurt him with that as well. I just didn't do enough, you know, and I have to live with it for the rest of my life.
You finished Justin Gaethje, you finished Anthony Pettis, Eddie Alvarez. I'll tell you a bad motherfucker. Do you think you'd be interested in fighting next, Masvidal versus Nate Diaz?
If I'd be what?
Would you be interested in fighting next, Masvidal and Nate Diaz? It's the BMF belt, so you're a BMF, so.
George is a buddy of mine. I don't sell out like fucking Colby Covington and talk bad about people who I roll with. No, George is a buddy of mine. I won't fight him. He's a training partner. He's a good guy. If anything, I'll go out to Florida and help him for that fight.
Hi, to your left, Alex Cornwell from Reuters. Why don't you, I guess, take some time off down the road? What happens next in your career?
Man, it's tough to say right now. You know, this was my 41st fight tonight. I'm only 30 years old. I've just been through so much in my fighting career. It's like, I don't know what's next, you know? I thought, honestly, the last 10 weeks of training camp and preparing for this fight, I thought the stars were aligning and I thought this was my night, you know? I thought this was like destiny, but I don't want to just keep crying up here in front of you guys, man, but this just means a lot to me. And, you know, to get to have a performance like that. And in the moment, I was just waiting for the each round. I thought I was gonna start pulling away and start outpacing him later on in the fight. But he's just so, his balance and his weight distribution against the fence, and then when he's on top, it's so strong. Physically, he didn't feel overwhelming. I've fought guys that are stronger than him, but skill-wise and balance-wise, he felt really good. I just really thought tonight I was gonna fly back home to the United States, undisputed world champ. So this really hurts, but I'm gonna go back home and talk to my wife. You know, like I said, I have a lot of tread left on the tires. I felt good out there tonight. I felt good this whole training camp. I'm not fighting just to fight. You know, I've been fighting to be the world champ. So these opportunities don't come that often. I just need to go back home and then think about what could be next for me.
Dustin is all about MMA from Brazil. I just want to say you are a very young guy. You have a long career in the future. I just want to say you fight very well tonight. It was unbelievable to see how you fight. So keep your head and go ahead. You are a very good fighter. You are a very good fighter. Just go home, rest a little bit. God have a good future for you in the UFC. Don't worry.
Thank you, man. I'm familiar with adversity. It's just I have to live the rest of my life asking myself if I could have done more, if I could have maybe escaped some of those takedowns, if I could have pushed harder when I had my underhooks against the fence. Those are the questions that'll haunt me. I've lost before.
All right, that was Dustin Poirier. Emotional stuff there, man. I mean, just, again, hard not to have your heart go out to him a little bit. But, I mean, it's that intensity, that focus, that commitment, you know, that are his key to success. And man, just what a great guy, man. I think everybody felt for him. And I think he'll be back. I think there's still plenty of fights, as he said, plenty of tread in the tires. He's not an old guy by any stretch, despite how many fights he has and how long he's been around. You know, did take a little shot at Colby Covington there. Maybe 170s in his future. Certainly some uncertainty right now with Colby Covington. But yeah, Dustin Poirier, man, class act all the way. And class act for Khabib, man. Just a phenomenal champion. And just incredible. Can't say enough. All right, listen, co-main event. Paul Felder picks up the split decision win over Edson Barboza. Good fight, man. It was intense as we thought it would be. The speed, the striking, the creativity of these guys, the durability of Paul Felder, all of it on display. I mean, just high-level stuff. What wasn't maybe as high-level was the scores. And you know what's funny is I really don't want to rip on the judges here because I think this was a close fight. I really, really do believe it was a close fight. And so I don't necessarily find the decision of Paul Felder somehow appalling, you know. I think anytime we see, you know, dueling 27-30 scores, basically, you know, 30-27 one way, 27-30 the other, I think that immediately stands out to you as, you know, what are you watching? But, I mean, I do always edge some caution. I mean, in the same way that I think sometimes, you know, a score of 50-45, for instance, you go, well, that was a blowout. Well, no, not necessarily. I mean, we're scoring this thing round by round. You know, if two punches or one punch are the difference in every single round for 25 minutes, you know, the score could come back 50-45, and you could say that is a razor-thin 50-45. So in the same way, I think you have to give the judges a little bit of leeway here in the fact that all three rounds were really, really, really tight. And I think it was compounded by the fact that, you know, Felder was the one moving forward. I mean, not that that's a surprise. That's the way these guys fight. Felder likes to walk forward. Barboza likes to move backwards so he can stay in kicking range. And they both did that effectively. For myself personally, on first watch, I scored it 29-28 for Barboza, giving him rounds 1 and 3. The funny part about that is when you look at it, statistically, round 3 was Felder's best round as far as the numbers of significant strikes that were landed. And so I think sometimes the statistics can be a little... I think they can be a little off. Maybe it's me that was a little bit off, but I just felt, you know, that was how the more effective strikes were being landed. And again, razor thin, so it's probably especially three. I thought round one was more clear, and I thought round two was more clear for Felder. So, you know, at that point, now you're talking about, well, one round should come down to decide it. And again, it's I don't think it's necessarily something that judges consciously think of, but I think we see it in MMA a lot. When a fighter is moving forward, he tends to be getting more credit. And maybe that's a little bit of what happened here. But again, I'm not calling this a robbery. I do think the scores being 30-27 and 27-30 among them, I think it makes it incredibly easy to criticize. But I do think, too, that the immediate reaction of both fighters to the reading of the decision gives away a little bit about how they felt about it. I mean, you've got Edson Barbosa, you know, incredibly disappointed. You know, his hand is in the air as they're reading it out. He's smiling. You know, he thinks he's won the decision. And, I mean, I guess most fighters do, but that felt like a more confident pose that he was striking. You know, you can read a lot into a fighter's posture and demeanor, I think, during those moments. You can see how they're carrying themselves. It didn't seem like he was giving it the old, come on, come on, come on. It felt like he believed it. And at the same side, Paul Felder, you know, when he's announced, he collapses in emotion and tears. And I get it. I mean, he was just through a battle, and this was a close fight. And he's got, I mean, I'm not saying that the only reason he was emotional is because he thought he lost. But I'm just saying, when you, those, that instant reaction of how their body, I kind of think that maybe Felder thought he came up short. We didn't get to speak to either guy, but Felder was transported immediately after, I'm assuming, to, I mean, they suture on site, so I guess it wasn't for the stitches. Probably, I'm sure they might want to get an IV in them. Look, the building was hot, as we said. I mean, it was warm, and I think it took a toll on a lot of people. So I think, you know, precautionary reasons more than anything. But anyway, I say that because, we didn't get a chance to speak to either guy. And you know, if Paul does think he didn't have to win, I'm not saying he's wrong. I think the scores could have been there. I would just like to hear, you know, kind of what they thought the difference was. It was a good fight, you know, it was. And maybe we see a trilogy down the line. I mean, Edson Barbosa is in a spot right now, right? I mean, 1-4, I believe, now in his last five, which is insane when you think about how talented he is. I mean, he's so quick, fast, powerful, entertaining. You know, I said beforehand, I don't think he's in any kind of danger. I think he's sticking around. Edson Barbosa is fun to watch. His style is incredibly fan-friendly. He's, you know, a human highlight reel, man. You know you're gonna get something. And every fight that he's in, I think, is competitive now. You know, obviously he's had some losses, but you know, I don't think he's in danger. But listen, man, that gets to you. You want to win fights. I mean, no matter how much you believe in the process, and you believe in yourself, and you believe in your results and training, you want to get wins. And that starts messing with your psyche a little bit, you know. And that's a tough spot for Edson Barbosa. Happy for Paul Felder. He's a good dude, man. Paul really is a good dude. I mean, both these guys are. But, you know, Paul chasing that dream. You know, he's obviously got commentating lined up on the back burner, which he's phenomenal at as well. But, you know, he wants to chase this in-cage glory as well. So a big, big win for him. Again, initial watch, I had Edson in round 1 and 3. But again, statistically, that round three was best. So if that's the way I felt about it, then, you know, all we're talking about is, well, you know, maybe you looked at round three a little bit wrong, and now Felder won. So frustrating. I know Barbosa's camp was very, very frustrated. Obviously, some good friends of mine behind the scenes there with that team, and they didn't necessarily love the decision. So, man, an absolute just a very, very close one. So. Beyond that, the main card, you know, I thought the best performance to me was Curtis Blaydes. Clearly, I mean, just an absolutely dominant performance over Shamil Abdurakhimov. I thought Curtis Blaydes would win this fight. I picked him in this fight. But, man, the domination that he had there, I mean, just no struggle whatsoever. Incredible, incredible win from him. I just don't think you could ask for more for Curtis Blaydes. He looked great. Afterwards, he ended up calling out Junior Dos Santos. Fortunately, that was right before we found out that he would be booked to fight in Moscow. So he's got an opponent lined up in Alexander Volkov, And so Curtis Blaydes' call out will fall on deaf ears, but certainly, you know, he deserves a big name. I mean, Blaydes, you know, the setbacks that he's had to Ngannou, I guess, you know, in a lot of ways have probably soured people on his potential, but he's tearing through other people. So Curtis Blaydes is, I think, still continuing to get better and is going to be a problem in the heavyweight division. You know, Islam Makhachev picked up a win over Davi Hamos. That fight was not great by any stretch of the imagination. It was frustrating. I mean, it was frustrating. Like, Islam did what he needed to win. And I'm sure in many ways, you know, you heard the pressure that Khabib Nurmagomedov was talking about. Of course, his training partner and friend. I'm sure Islam Makhachev felt a lot of the same responsibilities as well, man, the same pressures. I mean, certainly not to the level of Khabib Nurmagomedov, but Islam Makhachev's name is very, very known in this part of the world. And he's got a lot of fans, and he's got a lot of expectations. And, of course, you know, being the friend, the prodigy of the protege of, you know, the undefeated monster, Khabib Nurmagomedov, I mean, that comes with a lot of expectations. I think every time Islam goes out there, he feels the need to deliver on that. But, you know, the thing was, I think we all wanted to see a high-level grappling match. You know, if you listen to the preview show, this was one of the fights I circled on the card that I was looking out for the most, because I thought these were two very, very talented prospects. And more than anything, I thought they were phenomenal grapplers. And so I wanted to see some great grappling exchanges. You know, the top-level wrestling game of Islam Makhachev, the Brazilian jiu-jitsu of Davi Hamos. And instead, they came out and decided to kickbox. And no disrespect to them, but, you know, I that's not what I wanted to see. That's not what you want to see from these two guys. So that fight kind of disappointed a little bit. And I think it kind of stalled the feel of the pay-per-view right in the middle of it, because you started out with Diego Ferreira picking up a really big win over Mirbek Taisimov. Incredibly impressive there. Diego Ferreira, man, quietly behind the scenes has a very, very impressive record. We didn't get to talk to him either. Of course, Fortis MMA guy, so I'm always going to have a little love for him. But, man, to me, Mirbek Taisimov is somebody that I've been talking about for years. So, I mean, to me, I knew this was a stiff test for both guys. I knew this was going to be, a difficult fight for both men. But Diego Ferreira, after a little bit of trouble early on, just looked dominant, absolutely dominant. I think one of the biggest wins of his career. He did not get to make it to the post-fight press conference either. Also transported for potential, they just basically say precautionary reasons. But I'm pretty sure it's to, like, get an IV and get some fluids. Because, again, just the heat in the building was a lot. The heat and the humidity, they weren't unbearable. I mean, they were on par with, you know, I was Fortaleza was an incredibly hot show in Brazil. The venue didn't have any air conditioning in Brazil. You know, it's kind of an older building. Like, that was incredibly hot. There have been some other shows that were close to this. But it's just, I don't know, the level of humidity here was so different that it just put this coating on you. It made, like, the air heavy and kind of hard to breathe. So you can imagine, you know, knowing that's the reality of it and then going through this incredible contest. So Diego Ferreira didn't get to come either. Islam Makhachev, he did speak to the media. Obviously, he speaks Russian, so, you know, he spoke to the media a little bit. And ironically, he spoke after Khabib Nurmagomedov at the post-fight press conference. Now, Khabib had a really cool gesture and presented him with the belt and was like, hey, you're going to have one of these one day as well. So he did the press conference with the belt up there and, cool support. It was just funny because they held Islam Makhachev until afterwards because they figured the local media would want to talk to him. And they did. Again, he's a big name, but he spoke after Khabib. So, you know, it was already pretty late tonight, and then on top of that, you know, your headliner was done, so I think people were trying to wrap up and get out. So they held him for quite a long time. It ended up being just a couple of minutes. So, I thought Curtis Blaydes was a standout from this main event, and maybe he's not going to get the respect that he deserves for it. You know, he's fought all over the place, but this was a good win for him. On the prelims, Joanne Calderwood did pick up a big win over Andrew Lee. This was big as well. I did think Andrew Lee was fatiguing as well. Calderwood said, listen, super, super hot in the building. It got to me, but I knew it was getting to her as well. And so because of that, I knew that, that I just had to push through. And I think this is a big win for her. Now, I think a lot of us hardcore MMA fans have always been Joanne Calderwood fans. But I thought Andrea Lee was kind of quietly cementing herself as a future number one contender, a future title challenger, and not even very far in the future. I think she was getting close. In fact, you know, during fight week, she mentioned the name of Valentina Shevchenko. She wasn't afraid to say it. You know, again, it wasn't a situation of looking past or looking beyond, but she understood the direction that she was going, and she understood what was on the table. And this was a big result. And Joanne Calderwood continues to develop. You know, she showed some wrestling skills as well and was able to dig deep and dig out a big win over Andrea Lee. And, you know, I think Joanne Calderwood steals a little bit of that momentum back that she had before the loss to Caitlin Chookagian. I don't know. You know, you're in a weird spot at 125. Valentina's so dominant that it's tough right away. You know, in some ways, it's almost like, you know, Demetrius Johnson when the men's flyweight division was first developing. Now, of course, Valentina wasn't the first champ. But, you know, once Demetrius was in place and started, you know, knocking out contenders, you didn't know, you know, who you would pick. And I think, you know, not to discount anybody, but it is hard to find people at 125 that you would go, yeah, definitely. That one beat Shevchenko, no problem. You know, it's tough to say. But you're in another unique position in this. You know, Caitlin Chookagian and Jennifer Maia are fighting on November 2nd, UFC 244. But Valentina Shevchenko has made it clear she wants to fight again before the end of the year. She's becoming very, very marketable, so I'm sure the UFC would like to have her fight again. You know, she brings in audiences from many different nations. You know, she speaks multiple languages. She markets herself very well. And she draws a bit of a crowd, and I think the popularity around her is swelling. But, you know, she said it earlier this week. I talked to her, earlier this week, and she said, look, I thought I was going to fight Chookagian and Maia, and now they're fighting each other. So, you know, maybe a stretch to get Calderwood up there. We have Joanne as an honorable mention in our previous rankings. Now, those will change this week. It may be a little bit of a stretch, but it's possible. I mean, if you need a contender, Calderwood has a thing in that she has a name. You know, she's got that personality. And so I think crazier things have happened. But big win for Joanne Calderwood. Of course, she trains now in Vegas at Syndicate MMA. It was good to see her in a good mood. She talked openly, as she always does. I think she's always fun to hear from. She's got a great sense of humor. And, of course, come on, that voice, one of the most unique accents and voices in MMA. It's always pretty funny to hear from. So why not? Here's the featured prelim winner, Joanne Calderwood.
Big, big win for you. Tell us how you're feeling after that result.
I feel awesome. The biggest thing is I'm going home with all of my paycheck, so that's always a good thing.
Yeah. So wrinkles out there, man. A lot of really great wrestling, obviously. Did you know going in that was going to be much of a part of the game plan, or was something you kind of had to end up on the fly?
Listen, I've heard this so many times, opponents saying that they're going to stand with me, and then they always shoot, and that's why we work so hard on my groundwork and my dirty wrestling, like scrambles, and we work on everything, and we just know that in the back, obviously I want to keep it standing, but it's MMA at the end of the day, and I know these girls are going to shoot.
When you go to the judges, especially after what happened last time, I mean, this was a close fight, so what's going through your head? Did you feel like you won? Were you worried? Are they going to, screw me over? What was your thought?
Yeah, I was like, man, you left it to the judges again. So, yeah, I'm always worried when it goes to the judges, especially after my last one. And also, I'm always hard on myself. I want to get those finishes, but I also have to remember I'm in there with the best of the best, you know. These girls in the UFC are no joke, so, and especially Andrea Lee. Well, I just got told I threw like 270 shots, so I'm thinking that's a good number, but there's always room for improvement.
Do you feel like you came? It was like some momentum loss in that last fight, right? But it was also a really, really close fight as well. So do you feel like you kind of gained that back and you're in that same position, at the top again, or do you feel like now you've still got some momentum?
Yeah, I feel like the momentum's there, and I love being active. competitive. You know, I got into this sport and I wanted to fight every month. And I feel like I lost, like there was a gap in my career where I was struggling to get fights and I was injured and I was still in straw weight, so I was struggling to make weight. So now it's like I'm where I'm supposed to be and I've got that momentum behind me and I'm going all the way.
Just how hot was it?
Dude, it was so hot. Like, I didn't feel it so much when I was like fighting, but as soon as it was over, I was just like, get this rash guard off of me. But I can't thank the UFC and whoever it was put this building together. Like, the changing rooms were very well air conditioned, and in the arena, like, I'm hoping everyone's okay, they're staying hydrated. But yeah, it was hot out there.
But,
this place, and actually I thought I was here tomorrow and I had booked a safari, but my manager told me yesterday that my flights are actually tomorrow morning, so I'm not going to get on that safari, so I'm definitely coming back here.
When it is that hot, and it's a different bit of quite a bit, is it hard to drive or rattle? Kind of big rattling,
I definitely felt it, like, yeah, obviously you're fighting, so it doesn't really matter. I'm not sure if he's going to feel it, because especially I was like kind of early in the night, so I'm guessing there's more people coming to the arena, so the body heat could make a difference. And obviously Andrea Lee is not Khabib, so I'm sure it is going to be a lot hotter. I'm just here to keep winning now and wait for the call. You know, I know she, Valentina, doesn't have a fight, so I'm ready. And yeah, go back to the gym on Monday, celebrate with my teammates. They've got some fights coming up, and just wait for that call. If that's who they want me to face, that's who I will. Well. Everyone wants to get back at like a loss. If I had to do it, and it was only if UFC offered it, I would do it. I would drag my heels a little bit, but yeah, I would do it. Just to stay active.
And only Joanna Calderwood. Always fun to talk to. And again, that was a big, big win for her, man. Keeps her name up there at the top of the division for sure. So don't discount that. Listen, a lot of your bonuses ended up coming out of the prelims. Prelims were not bad. You know, I thought the night started out a little bit slow. Don Madge picked up a win in the very first fight of the night. Now, he did admit afterwards, of course, he took on a late notice replacement there in for Essien, but also ended up breaking his hand early on. So he said, listen, I kind of had to change my game plan because of the late change, and then on top of that, I broke my hand as well. So that was rough. And then, of course, Omari Akhmadov picked up a win over Zach Cummings. No disrespect to Omari Akhmadov, but both those guys are grinders. You know, you kind of knew what was going to happen in that going in. It was going to be a bit of a slow and grinding affair. But those early prelims, then they got going real busy. Muslim Salikov picked up the TKO over win over at Nordin Taleb. Big knockout there with the big right hand. Then Bilal Muhammad followed up with a submission win over Takashi Sato to wrap up those early prelims. Both Bilal Muhammad and Muslim Salikov did pick up $50,000 bonuses. along with Otman Azatai, who also had a knockout in the first fight on the FX prelims. So you had a nice little run. I mean, think about that, three performance of the night bonus winners in a row on the prelims, two on ESPN Plus, one on FX. Listen, Bilal Muhammad, you know, you heard Farah Hanoun, who, if you heard her earlier this week on the earlier show, the preview show, you know, she said, listen, I think this is a guy that got kind of underutilized this week and underpromoted this week. And, man, he did. He had, Bilal Muhammad had a great following, a lot of energy in the building when he competed. And he said, listen, man, it was even a little bit surprising to me. It was nice to see the amount of support I got here. Of course, he does have ties to the region geographically, and he said it made me realize, you know, I have a bigger platform than I thought. And Bilal Muhammad, you know, I think, you know, a bit of a criminally underrated guy. You know, he's had some setbacks, but you look at the people that he's lost to, you know, Jeff Neal, tough as hell. Vicente Luque, all right, we know all about Vicente Luque, man. That dude is on an incredible run. Alan Jobon as well, who a lot of respect for Alan Jobon. Of course, that was in his UFC debut. You know, I had a chance to meet Bilal Muhammad, who was still fighting on the Titan FC banner back when I was still doing broadcasting for them. So, you know, a bit of a criminally underrated guy, and not just as a fighter, but as a great personality as well. Gets it, you know what I mean? So he had a great performance. Speaking of Otman Azatar, big knockout of Timur Pakalin. Again, netted him $50,000. Just a beautiful shot, and the way Timur fell was a bit scary, man. He was twitching for a bit on the canvas, man. He's had a couple big knockouts in his career under the UFC banner. But big win for Otman Azatar. And if you want a little bit of entertainment and you don't mind multiple languages to do it, go check out the MMA Junkie YouTube page. You'll see the video there of Otman Azatar. Well, we also have the story on there as well. But his brother, Abu, is there. And they are a couple characters, man. They are animated as can be. They kind of riff off each other. Abu is actually a little bit more animated and kind of acts as his translator, but it's funny. These guys have a lot of energy, man. They are absolutely hilarious. So maybe worth going to see them. And also maybe worth going to see Sarah Morris as well. Sarah, she picked up a big win over Liana Jajua, a dominant win for Sarah Morris. Now, marred, of course, by the fact that she missed weight. She did not try to make excuses for it. But she did miss weight pretty badly by a couple pounds. She apologized profusely for it, but looked very, very dominant in a spot where she knew she needed to win. She had had some losses, and she knew just the ground she needed to win. And she is funny. I mean, she has got a personality, you know, kind of a quiet, soft-spoken Canadian now living in Vegas. I shouldn't say quiet. She doesn't mind talking a little bit, but she's kind of reserved in the way she talks. Her body language is a little almost shy to a degree, but then she's like, I just love violence in the cage. Like, I just like beating chicks up. It's like, all righty then. But she had a fun interview in the back as well, and she talked about it. You know, like, hey, don't get me wrong. I know what was on the line here. I know what I had to do. And I was glad I got it done. So a big win for her. And, of course, you know, the other prelim we didn't talk about, probably the biggest shock of the night, Lerone Murphy and Zubair Tukugov fighting to a split draw. Zubair was he was feeling it, no question about it, man. I mean, again, I think it comes down to the heat, you know. It was just on a different level here. The heat and humidity were on a different level here. And I will be interested to see, you know, there's a five-year partnership moving forward. You know, Dana was asked about it in the post-fight press conference. You know, hey, would you know, do you think maybe it affected the fights? He kind of blew it off, and I get it. You know, he is right. It's not like these were conditions where you were concerned for the safety of the athletes, but it's hot, man. It was different here, and I was told by a couple people in the region that even, you know, moving it a couple weeks, you know, later into September, October would make it feel better. We'll see. We'll see if they make any adjustment. I guess a lot of that depends on the venue too. I mean, I don't think they have a lot of, like, just, you know, big venues available. But man, the money they throw around here, they can build whatever they want. So certainly they could make adjustments to the technology if they don't want to make adjustments to the schedule. But Zubair, neither fighter came to the post-fight press conference. It was a draw. Or they didn't come back for scrums either. But I know one of the reasons Zubair did, I know he was, I mean, you could see it visibly. He was struggling. So I think he was transported for safety reasons. So, again, probably get an IV in him, get some get some liquids back into him, dehydration, that sort of thing. So overall, listen, I thought it was a good night. I mean, this card was certainly built around Khabib Nurmagomedov. Of course, you know, he did pick up that $50,000 performance bonus as well. He was the last performance bonus. No gate and no live attendance given. Originally, I was told that I believe the building seats somewhere around 12,000 or 13,000. It looked pretty full from my perspective. I do know, talking to people, man, it was tough to get tickets. It was a very, very big event. There were a lot of people in town for this. But the reason being that no attendance and no gate figures were announced is that the UFC was not involved in it. I mean, this is part of the deal. You think about that. I mean, they have nothing to do with ticket sales. They don't need to do anything. They just have to show up and put on a good show. Now, they did it, man. You just saw Dana White was doing live Instagram chats every night to talk about the event, to promote it. You know, they were doing the looking forward to a fight video series where they were putting out content every single day. I mean, you think about that and what that takes to get turned around. The massive guest fighter roster that they had. I mean, this was a big, big deal. And afterwards, UFC President Dana White said that, you know, he actually had discussions this week about doing something even bigger next year. He said, you know, kind of like International Fight Week, but more. So, yeah. They talked about maybe doing a looking for a fight episode, like while they're here next year, but doing the fight on the roof of the Louvre here. So, I mean, crazy. It is going to be insane to see what is come up with over the next couple years. No question. There is money in the region, and they like to flaunt it a little bit. It's a PR thing. You know, as Farah Hanoun said earlier this week, you know, they've got the wealth, and they want to show the world, you know, that we're here, we're worth coming here. It's a PR tour for their country, you know, and to boost tourism, to get tourism dollars into the economy, to get people coming here, and just to change their reputation, I guess, you know, to deal with any potential negative misconceptions about the region. You know, they want to clear that up. So we'll see what these events are like. I'm telling you, it's a long trip, man. It'd be nice if I could afford the direct flights, but we got that chunky budget. We're trying to keep the cost down a little bit. But even direct flights are long. But for me, you know, tomorrow I fly home. It's from here to London Heathrow, Heathrow to Chicago, and then Chicago to Vegas. So it's not the most direct route, but it's not terrible. And my layovers are pretty short, but even that's like 22 hours to get home. So it's a bit of a haul to get out here, and it's definitely not cheap, but I'm glad we were able to cover it in full for you this week, and we'll see how it goes for the next 4 years. It sounds like, you know, they want to do big fights here. They want these to be big events. You know, if they're talking about doing it like International Fight Week, then I imagine that we will be back here next year. So, all right, listen, like I said, Cold Coffee is going to wrap up Bellator, all that's going on. We'll have full coverage of all that good stuff. Me, it's late. I got to get some sleep. so that I can head to the airport and get home. Miss the family. It's been a long week for sure. Be always good to get back home. But it was a hot week. It was a sweaty week. But it ended up being a pretty good week. And Khabib Nurmagomedov is your undisputed UFC lightweight champion. He looked pretty damn incredible. Hopefully you enjoyed the coverage. We'll be back next week. I'll be with my man Cole Coffee next week. We'll be back in Vegas. The young Mike Bond will be up in Vancouver where he's got some family. We're going to sit that one out, let him handle that one on his own. We'll help out from Vegas, and then I go to Mexico City the week after that, and then a couple weeks after that, Cole Coffee and I go to Australia. So we got plenty of stuff coming up on the horizon, but we'll get to all that later. In the meantime, thanks for listening.